Deacon and Dad.
Okay, here's what we're going to do today. We're going to talk about Black history, and it's not Black History Month. And it's always nice
it is to always talk Black history.
It's always Black history. So that was one of the things we want to talk about. First of all, last month they opened up the National African American History Museum.
Yes, which is, I cannot wait to go.
Which has been a long time coming.
Yes.
We have a mutual friend who went to the gala, and she loved the museum.
Mm-hmm.
But she was telling me the one story that really got to her emotionally, aside from some of these, all these Black artifacts. But down in the basement, they lead you down to, you know, you're just going down and it gets darker and darker. And finally, you're in this really sort of confined space.
Yeah.
And there are all these people sort of jammed together. And she's slightly claustrophobic.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, what's going on here? And she's like looking for the exit. But she noticed that everybody else was getting a little freaked out. The whole point of that part of the exhibit was to give people the feeling of what it was like to be in a slave home. No exit.
Uh-huh.
And she said she could not wait to get out of there.
Yeah.
That really gave that emotional weight to what it was like. Now, I have to tell one story. I spent a lot of time in Africa, but one time I went to Senegal and I went to Gori Island, which is the embarkation point for a lot of the slave ships. So I went down to the slave quarters on Gori Island, and because I knew I had some connections, I got in when it really wasn't open for tourists. But I got into this space, and there's a door. It's just a small door.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing there. It's just a cutout. And this is where the ships would pull up below the hull, so that you would just be able to walk into the slave ship. But I'm standing there, and there's nothing on the other side but ocean. There's nothing you can see forever. And I stood there, and then I went down on my knees, and I curled up into a fetal ball, and I cried for about 20 minutes, because it was the most emotionally draining thing I ever heard. I mean, I've ever experienced, because I thought, this is where my people came from. This is the last sight they saw, was getting on this ship. Now, you know, just to give some context, I've covered wars, I've covered disasters, I've been in some really dangerous places. I was never more emotionally drained than standing in that open doorway in Gori Island, thinking about, this is where my people came from.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
Because once you understand the context of that,
yeah,
you put it into context. Yeah.
Right.
It is
okay. So now here's the thing that we really want to do about this particular section of the Deacon and Dad, is that history tends to be from a male perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And one of the things that I've always noticed, and you and I have talked about it, that women, especially Black women, have had just as profound an effect on American history and on history in general.
Absolutely.
Okay. So what we're going to do is talk about the most influential but underrated Black women
in
American history.
Yes, I got my list together.
Okay, and I have my list together.
All right.
Okay, so we're going to break this into two things. I'm going to do sort of the historical, artistic, and political figures.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to do the musicians.
I'm doing music.
You're doing music. Okay. So let me start.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. Phyllis Wheatley.
Phyllis Wheatley.
Okay, now a lot of people have no clue anymore who Phyllis Wheatley was. Phyllis Wheatley was the first poet to publish in America. She was black. Not only was she black, she actually was from Africa.
So the very first published poet in America, period.
Period.
Regardless of race, regardless of gender.
It was a black woman.
Wow.
From Africa.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, she came from essentially, we think, Senegal.
Okay.
And her most famous poem was on arriving in America from Africa. I think I got that right. It's a short poem, but looking back in context, it was so deep. It's a short poem, and I used to know it by heart, but I'm not going to try to attempt to do that. People look it up.
We can put a link into it.
But essentially what she said was, hey, I came to America, I got saved, I learned that God can accept everybody, no matter how black you are. And even though she was incredibly popular with white people, both here and in England, she was a celebrity. She was a celebrity poet. But in the context now, you read how subtly and sarcastically she talked about racism in America. It's like, I came from a land that had all kinds of good stuff going on, and y'all made me change my religion. And maybe, but the interesting thing was that she was bought by a tailor in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
They taught her to read, which was sort of against it, but she was brilliant. She learned to speak English in 2 months. And she was 7 years old when she came to America.
Mm-hmm.
She learned to write and read. She read the Bible by the time she was like 8 or 10. She wrote her first poems at 10.
Wow.
Her book of poetry was published when she was 16.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. The woman was brilliant. Okay. So that's one of those lost people, black women in history, who had a profound effect on America, both from a poetic standpoint, from a cultural standpoint, and how popular she was. And this is all, she died before the Civil War. I think she came to America in 1773. Okay, anyway, so that's my first very famous first black woman that I ever knew about who had a profound effect on American culture. And she's that's one of her canon, that she is considered the first black poet.
Mm-hmm.
She established black culture.
Right.
And she essentially established women as a cultural phenomenon, as artists. Okay,
right.
So that's,
we're going to have to do a couple of segments on this, because there's no way we're going to get through all this.
All right.
So we're going to do a few of them here.
Right.
And we can continue this on episodes.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So my first one is Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So
blues,
tell me about...
Blues guitarist, very influential. She was playing, you know, first of all, a woman playing electric guitar. Not okay. really, I heard of, but blues, and pretty much blues rock. It's pretty much what the foundation of what rock is.
Okay, now, my next one is Ida B. Wells.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now, she was a crusading journalist. So I admired her because I was a nurse. But you got to remember that she did this post-Civil War through the early... I think she died in like 1930s. So she was very influential both as a journalist, an activist, a feminist. And here's the thing that Ida B. Wells, people don't get how influential it. She did the first public transportation boycott in Memphis, Tennessee. She was so influential. She told the people the black people in Memphis to stop riding the trolleys.
Wow.
And the trolley company came to her and said, you got to do something because black people aren't riding the trolleys. And she goes, yeah, right. Well, can't you tell them to start riding the trolley? Why? Because that's where most of our money comes from. But just to show you how much more influential this woman was. I mean, she was known all over the country. She was one of the first black journalists. She wrote in, she was a columnist in just about every black newspaper. Her specialty was that she covered lynchings. And from a perspective, she would get all the facts. She would write these articles and these pamphlets about black men being lynched for no good reason. And so she was one of the first abolitionists. I mean, not abolitionists, but she would talk about sort of the racism that was going on and how black men were being murdered for no good reason. They always made it up, and mostly it was about them having some relationship with white women. They were raping white women, they were looking at white women, they were saying hello to white women. So that became the her theme that she was saying, and she got in trouble saying, hey, you know, sometimes these white women were doing the same thing white men were doing. They had voluntary relationship with black men. God, did that get her in trouble. She had to leave the South because they were death threats, real death threats. So she didn't go back to the South for 30 years. But one of the things that happened is in Memphis, things got so bad, she came to the conclusion that there's nothing we can do here in Memphis.
Wow.
And we need to leave. 6,000 black people in Memphis left Memphis, packed up all their stuff, left everything, and went to Oklahoma.
Wow.
And that was like, and Memphis was mostly black. So this was an economic drain. So once again, this powerful black woman got people to move away.
Good for her.
And the last thing that was, she was also part of the suffragette movement, trying to get women to vote. So she worked with all of the famous white feminists of the time, Susan B. Anthony and all of those people, Emma Goldman. But she kept telling them, hey, you know, y'all can't sit here and not have take on black issues. And they were like, yeah, okay. At one point, they were having their convention, the suffragette government convention in Atlanta. And sorry, so noisy in it. Frederick Douglass was scheduled to speak.
Yeah.
And Susan B. Anthony said to Frederick, look, don't come down. You know, it's going to be great. And Ida B. Wells went to Susan Anthony because they were friends and said, hey, you can't do that. This is against all your principles. You know, and they got into a snack about, you know, it's okay when I'm here talking about white women's right to vote, but you aren't willing to talk about what it is for black men and black women to get the vote.
Right.
So, again, she was the predecessor of Black Lives Matter. That's why I love Ida B. Wells.
All right, so my next one is Bette Davis.
Okay.
Bette Davis. So she was...
Not the actress.
Not the actress.
Okay. Gotta make it clear.
She was a singer, and her prime was in early 70s. Put out a series of funk rock albums that, till this day, stand up. She was at one time married to Miles Davis.
Yes.
So she's also probably more well known for that than actually her music. And the thing is, of course, the record labels did not know what to do with this black woman who's funky, sexual, and just, you know, a badass on stage and musically, and she did not compromise anything. So they were telling, you need to tone it down. She's like, no, I'm not doing it. So she's just this badass, and every black female rock singer that I know mention her, reference her as an influence. Maybe not directly, but in terms of style, but at least in terms of attitude and what you can do against the record labels. I know you can do whatever you want, especially as a black woman.
Okay. My next person.
Right, let's do two more.
Okay. I guess in my lifetime, I got to go for, I wish she had lived longer, Barbara Jordan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Barbara Jordan was in Congress from Texas. And she was the quintessential black woman. She was large. She was feminine, but she looked, you know, she was very, and she had like this deep, gorgeous voice. And the woman had a command of the English language, bar none. She would start, in her speech, she would be using words that nobody, I mean, you'd have to register the dictionary because she was that good. And she would reference, she was the smartest black woman of its age. And this is in the 60s. She was in Congress and she was amazing. And people would come around, and I actually got to hear her speak. She came to, I was in Indianapolis at the time, but she came and spoke, and I mean, the woman was mesmerizing. She died very young, unfortunately, but I think if Barbara Jordan had lived, she would have been the first black president. That's how good she was. She was both a brilliant orator, brilliant writer, brilliant politician, because here's this black woman getting elected to Congress multiple times in Texas.
Right, in Texas, of all that, yeah.
So she was, I adored Barbara Jordan, and I just wish that, and too many young black people have no idea who she is. I just want, just listen to her speeches. I mean, they talk about Martin Luther King being a great orator.
Right.
I'm sorry. Barbara Jordan beat him hands down. And that's saying something, because I thought Martin Luther King was one of the great orators of our age. But Barbara Jordan beat him hands down. That woman could sway a crowd. She could get you jumping up and clapping, because that voice and that power that she exuded. Oh. So that's my favorite black woman politician.
Powerful. Powerful. All right, my next one is, I'm going to say polystyrene. She was a punk rock singer. Came out in the late 70s with a band called X-Ray Specs. Out of England.
Okay.
Out of England. So it was her. So this black woman as a front woman of this punk rock band.
Right.
And the band itself was unusual because they actually featured a saxophone.
So in a punk band?
In this punk band, exactly.
Okay. Right.
Exactly. So it was a sax and then this black woman as a lead singer. And the music was actually really catchy. Just standard punk, you know, not too complicated. But she never really got the due that I think she, of course, deserved. I mean, it was punk rock, so it never really hit the mainstream. So the old school punks kind of know her, and they have a cult following.
Right.
But never really blew up to be the influential person that she did influence a lot of people, and they didn't even know it.
That's
one of those things. You're like, you know, where'd that come from? It's like, that's polystyrene. That's where that came from. And she passed away about a couple of, maybe about 4 years ago, and she released an album. I think she was like 69 when she died. And she released an album maybe about a year before she passed away. And I got that album, and it was actually pretty good.
Okay.
So she was still doing her thing.
Okay.
That's right.
See, and it's, this is the amazing thing about this conversation, is that we both, from ourselves, have all of these women.
Mm-hmm.
These black women that we admire and that we look up to, and we're always like, you never heard of, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, it's bad enough that Black History doesn't get taught except in February. And just a, as an aside, when I was a kid, it was Black History Week.
Right, right. I remember that.
So we've graduated to a whole month. Yes. Of course, it's the shortest month of the year.
That's what we always say, a shorter month.
But there's so much history that women, Black women, who were really pivotal, get left out.
Yes.
Or get minimized. That all we hear about are the Black men who were part of that,
right,
the movement.
There's just as many Black men as the,
yeah,
in the movement. Until this day, it's still a problem. I was actually on the music side. There's this this show with this famous engineer who brings other engineers on, and studio owners. He actually has one, which I give him credit for. The top female studio engineers or studio owners.
Oh, okay.
So he had these three women on. Two were women of color. Mm-hmm. And there were three. And they were still talking about the same thing. You know, it's a male-dominated world, and anybody walks in their studio, they are the owner, and they still have to prove themselves. And these little stupid-ass kids think women don't know anything.
Yes, yes.
So, no, I believe women can do, they are as smart. I mean, for human, it's just things.
Okay, but I've been trying to track down a joke that I don't know if I did it when I was working as a comic or somebody else did it. But it's the old joke about, you know, some white guy said, well, a Black woman raised me. And the joke was a Black guy. And it's been so ingrained in me that maybe it was Dick Gregory. I think it may have been, but I remember doing the joke. And me standing there talking about some white guy saying, a Black woman raised me. And I said, well, a Black woman raised me.
That's good.
And so that was my perspective of all of, I mean, you know how much I loved your grandfather and what a great man he was. But I think of the women in my family as being the, having so much more influence. Most of the teachers I had were Black women up until I got to high school.
An influence in kind of a secretive, subservient way, because they couldn't let on that they knew so much, because the men would be like, what's your problem?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they had to do all of this in a roundabout way.
Yes, yes.
At least the educational part.
I guess that's, now that you mention it, I'm thinking about, that's how I heard about Phyllis Wheatley. One of my teachers in grade school, we had to read poetry, and we had to read all about all the Black poets. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking now, a lot of them were women. So there was this subtle influence.
Yeah.
And it's come out now full-fledged, because I get freaked out when I watch history repeat itself.
Yeah.
I mean, we're still at the point where white feminists and Black feminists are having differences of opinion about what's important.
Yeah.
And that, you know, white feminists want support our causes, and Black feminists are saying, yeah, but, you know, we not only have to deal with being women, we have to deal with being Black.
Yeah.
And y'all need to recognize that.
You know, they don't quite get that.
And so that's, it's more both racism and sexism, and it's something that we all have to, I wish
we didn't have to deal with it,
yes,
but yet we do every single day because it's thrust in our face.
Yes. I just hope that there are enough of us men, Black men, who recognize that and who can venerate black women and exalt them to the place where, in the place of equality that they deserve, and sometimes more than equality, as recognize them as the leaders.
As the leaders, exactly. Yeah. You know what,
they're the mothers, they're the nurturers.
Yes. This is a great inspiration, so I want to include in my show. I need to mention or do some kind of tribute to black women.
Okay, yeah.
You know, because it is silent, and they do need to be recognized more regularly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a great conversation.
Okay.